general. I think that kind of speaks for itself. So without any further ado, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members.
This is the presentation that we're doing today. It is a clause by clause outline of the whole bill, as well as a summary, or sections of the bill are summarized. We provide that as well. Thirdly, the CD contains comments that have been received, as well as the responses of the department to such comments. We have also included in the CD supporting documentation for an example user-friendly guide, which are given in the four coastal languages, English, Xhosa, Zulu, and Afrikaans. We've also included the Xhosa version of the bill in the CD, the green paper on coastal management, the white paper on coastal management, as well as a booklet called or titled Our Coast for Future. These will leave with you, Chair, at the end of our presentation. If we can have Chair, the coast contributes about 35% of the country's GDP, and an observation that has now been made is that worldwide 60% of the population resides along the coast. We observe in our country that there are challenges along the coast that have not been adequately dealt with, and the bill that is before the members seeks to address those challenges. The bill, Chair, says a new approach to managing coastal resources. It touches on how we could promote social equity and best economic use of the coastal resources while protecting the environment. The bill introduces an integrated way in which the coast could be managed. It also provides a framework for management of activities in the coastal zone. If we can look at the challenges that have been observed, and we start off with cases where coastal processes have been ignored. What has happened, Chair, is that natural coastal processes such as wind patterns, such as the movement of waves, such as current patterns, which result in sediment movement, for an example, erosion, wind-blown sand along the coast, all these have been ignored in the past. Secondly, as we know, Chair, climate is changing, and we also know one of the results could be a sea level rise, and such has been ignored in the past. Planning and development did not adequately consider such processes in the past, and examples of such exclusion or omissions are evidenced by erosion along the coast. You would have heard in Langeban as well as in St. Francis in the Eastern Cape. You would have heard also, Chair, or seen damage caused by storms along the KwaZulu-Natal coast, as well as what wind-blown sands could do. The first slide there, or the first figure, shows storm damage in KwaZulu-Natal along the north coast. Next. The second figure shows storm damage also along the KwaZulu-Natal north coast. Next. Still in KwaZulu-Natal, but this time in Margate, again storm damage that has been seen. Next. Wind-blown sand in Witwatersrand in the Western Cape. Next. Cases where development has occurred below the 1 in 50 year flood line, we've seen effects of that, for instance, in the Southern Cape. Next. Chair, having highlighted the challenges that have arisen out of the natural process is not being observed, what then are the solutions that are proposed by the bill before you? The bill, Chair, does consider the natural coastal processes. For an example, the bill requires that planning and EIA take coastal processes into account. For an example, it will take into consideration things like sea level rise, erosion-prone coast, flood plains, and wind-blown sand. And these are outlined in section 63.2e. Chair, the mechanisms employed by the bill include demarcation of the coast. This is outlined in chapter 2. We can also adjust zone boundaries according to sensitivities of the coast. And we wish to point out, Chair, this has nothing to do with private property boundaries, and this is covered in section 26 to 29. Thirdly, on mechanisms, Chair, setback lines are dealt with in section 25. And control of certain activities via stricter EIA section 63 of the bill. The second challenge we want to touch on briefly, Chair, is where coastal access is denied to people. Limited access to the coast can be caused by people being denied movement across or through farmland. Second, in cases where there are property developments, for an example, golf estates, access can be denied to people in areas where there is mining, and also in cases where residential owners close existing access services. The diagram, Chair, illustrates how access can be denied people who want to move along the beach, for an example, in addition to access being denied perhaps when people want to move from inland towards the ocean, people can also be denied movement across or along the beach. What solutions are suggested by the bill in order to improve access to the coast, Chair? The bill ensures existing access points and access strips over land are reinstated, and this is just section 18 to 20. The bill requires municipalities to demarcate access land, signpost access points, and properly maintain them. To the coast, in other words, from inland to the coast, and also along the coast. The bill, as far as access is concerned, enables expropriation only if owner refuses to allow access strip, or in cases where no existing access occurs or is found in a general area. The next slide shows access provided over state lands. This is in the Eastern Cape. Next. The next slide, Chair, shows pollution. This is in Cape Town. And as you can see, those young people are playing on a pipeline that would discharge wastewater into the ocean. Next. The next challenge we want to briefly touch on, Chair, is pollution not adequately controlled. Pollution challenges stem from discharge of untreated and or inadequately treated wastewater. And in many cases, this happens into the sensitive coastal areas, which are predominantly near shore. Second, there's inadequate control over incineration or dumping in the sea. And thirdly, pollution has impact on the environment. It would also have an impact on tourism, where it affects use recreational use of beaches, for an example, and pollution could have impact on the health as well as on development if you think of activities such as aquaculture. The next slide shows an outfall of a fish factory, and Chair, you can see the water that comes or that issues there is bloody, so to put it. And obviously the water is being released into the nearshore area without any serious treatment. What is the solution to this, then, Chair? How does the bill propose to control pollution? The bill requires that all existing waste disposal pipelines, or as we sometimes call them, the outfalls have to be assessed, and this is dealt with in Section 69. The bill requires strict control over new sea outfalls, sewage and industrial outfalls, for an example, fish factories and aquaculture outlets. These would be more strictly controlled than before. Thirdly, the bill clarifies the roles of our department as well as the Department of Water Affairs in pollution management. And fourthly, the bill aligns legislation with international best practice in cases, for an example, of dumping at sea, as well as in prohibiting incineration. Chair, another major challenge has been because of planning and decision-making that has been fragmented. Planning and decision-making historically has been sectoral. For an example, we've had cases in the past where sewage or bloody water outfalls are constructed next to a hotel or next to blue flag beaches. We've had cases where development has been allowed in flood-prone areas, and the picture that we showed you earlier in KwaZulu-Natal involving the red Mercedes is a case in point. Development has also been allowed in areas subject to coastal erosion. Again, we've illustrated this in a picture earlier. Historically, Chair, planning has stopped at the high water mark. It has not gone beyond how high water mark into the beach and the ocean. What solution then is being proposed by the bill? The bill, Chair, creates an integrated institutional framework. And that framework consists centrally of a National Coastal Management Committee, which will be chaired by our department. Affiliated to this National Coastal Management Committee are the four provincial committees, KZN, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Northern Cape. And also affiliated to these provincial committees would be local representation. Some of these provincial committees are already operating, some informally, and the thinking is that these would be formalized within 12 months of the bill changing into an act. Still on solutions, Chair, the bill proposes that planning and decision-making be integrated. The bill calls for coastal management programs. It is envisaged that there would be a national coastal management program, and aligned to the national coastal management program would be a provincial coastal management program, and aligned to that would be a municipal coastal management program. What would be the main function of these committees? But before we outline these, we expect that there will be wide participation in these coastal committees. And they would then derive a common vision for people who live in a particular area. It would develop objectives, set priorities, design strategies, norms and standards, as well as indicators, and this is dealt with in Chapter 6 of the bill. Yeah. Further challenges, Chair, in adequate control over activities affecting the coast. Activities along the coast do cause environmental damage. For an example, damage to dunes. Agricultural activities, for an example, have involved clearing of land and of indigenous vegetation. There has been draining of wetlands and there has been obstruction of water, and this has affected the functioning of estuaries. There have been development activities along the coast that have not been properly managed. The problem being that EIAs have tended to focus very, very narrowly. For an example, we've had situations where structures have been erected and infrastructure constructed in inappropriate areas. For an example, sea walls, harbors and piers, car parks and access roads, as well as resources having been constructed in inappropriate areas. How does the bill then propose these could be addressed? First of all, Chair, the bill defines what is called coastal public property. And generally speaking, this includes the sea, the beaches, and the adjacent state land. What the concept of coastal public property allows us to do, it allows management of the coast in the interest of the whole community. As part of the coastal public property, we distinguish an area which is called the coastal protection zone. The coastal protection zone will span 100 meters above the high water mark in urban areas, whereas it will span a distance of 1 kilometer or 1,000 meters in rural areas. Now, the beauty of this concept, Chair, is that the coastal protection zone can be adjusted. It can be made narrower or wider depending on the sensitivity in a particular area. So it allows, as that bullet indicates, stricter control in sensitive areas. Next. Chair, we hasten to add that the concept of coastal protection zone does not affect existing property rights. It does not affect provincial, municipal, cadastral, or other legally recognized boundaries. We observe, Chair, that no private property can be expropriated in terms of this bill without following procedures as per the Expropriation Act. EIAs in this zone, Chair, will have to consider additional issues. They will have to take into consideration coastal management programs that have been designed or developed in particular areas. The EIAs will have to be aware of dynamic coastal processes. They will have to take into consideration estuarine management plans, cumulative impact, and importantly, the interest of the whole community. Chair, that would conclude the section on challenges and solutions, and I will now just quickly go over what has happened in the consultation process. Just to remind ourselves that Cabinet approved that the bill be released for public comment for 90 days in December of 2006. The department then made a concerted effort to inform the general public and stakeholders and to elicit their responses. This included announcements and interviews by the minister, press releases by the minister, press releases, adverts and posters that indicated details of information sessions, radio interviews in Xhosa, Zulu, Afrikaans and English, production of a user-friendly guide in 4 coastal languages, loading the bill, white paper, user-friendly guide, information session, details and general coastal management documents, most of which, Chair, are in the city that will leave with you. Distribution of information and invites were electronically made available to stakeholders, and there were dedicated provincial coastal committee meetings called in order to discuss the bill. We've sent out user-friendly guides and invitations to all coastal authorities, and some city information sharing sessions were undertaken. Yeah. If I can touch on the comments that have been received, Chair, a total of 350 pages of comments were received from more than 100 respondents representing the following stakeholder groups. And we provide numbers in brackets. We have comments from business and industry, from consultants in general, from environmental groups, the general public, legal profession, property owners, associations, research institutions, statutory bodies, local government, provincial government, and national government. Chair, we think there has been an overwhelming response that has been positive to the bill. The comments that we have received have been considered and they have been incorporated into the bill and where appropriate changes have been made. And lastly, Chair, the bill has been checked and certified by the State Law Advisor's Office. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi, for your elaborate presentation. I'm now going to invite questions for clarity. Dr. Kachani.
Thanks for your suggestion. I think when you consider the coastal management zone programs and policies, have you taken into consideration rising water levels, which will be affecting low-lying areas as a result of melting glaciers and so on, which might then flood these low-lying areas, not immediately, but in the next 10 to 15 years time.
If I may ask a question myself, I'd like to know how this bill is actually addressing areas which were affected by the previous storms that we had in KZN. You may respond.
Thank you, Chair. The bill does not, and my colleagues can help me with the answer here, does not directly address the possibility or not the possibility, the issue of rising water levels. It doesn't directly address it, except to say in future when property developments are planned, they would then have to take that into consideration. In the past, that has not been taken into consideration. But in future, we would now say, take into consideration the 150-year flood line. Take into consideration the fact that this area is a floodplain. So, and in an area such as those, building would not be allowed, or development would not be allowed. Can I see the last slide? The slide you had there. Chair, this is the sort of concept that we have of the coastal protection. So, building, as you can see from that slide, is not on the beach itself, but they allow for what we call a protection zone, and building is allowed only behind a certain line, and that is based on the line has been scientifically determined that there would be no danger if people build where they build. But if they build in the direction of the ocean from that line, then they would be exposed to be in danger. Therefore, again, if to address Honorable Kachalia's question, if the sea level were to rise, because people have an idea how much it could rise in 50 years or 100 years, that would have to be taken into consideration, that we would expect that in 100 years it would rise by 3 centimeters or 4 centimeters, and therefore you couldn't build here, but you could build in a particular area. These are what are then called coastal setback lines, and these are dealt with in part 7 of the bill. Again, I would give a similar answer to your question, Chair, to say, if you look at the erosion that we've seen in KZN that has been caused by storms, the erosion is caused because that area is prone to erosion, and therefore it should have been determined that no building could occur. But because we didn't have this integrated planning that the bill proposes, people were allowed to build in an area that is prone to erosion. So future development, when this bill is enacted, could not occur in those areas. And correct me if I'm wrong, Radia, unless the coastal committees or the coastal programs allow, which we like to think they would not. Thank you.
Now, if I may follow up on what you just said, now, what assurances have these people got who were affected by these storms? Because if we are going to rebuild in the same area, and history has told us that that's really not a safe area for people to build, how do we deal with a situation like that?
Chair, if I may, I think the issue that you're asking about relates to, are there any precautionary measures to mitigate the impact of the damage that has been suffered by these people, and what can we do to prevent this happening in the future? I think Dr. Machito has addressed what we're going to do in the future, partially. The other, I want to address the second part of that first before I address the other question, and that is that in addition to the coastal management program, if anybody wants to build a development or rebuild somewhere where there has been destruction, remember, in terms of this bill, any development that must take place or any activity that is listed in terms of this bill in NEMA, because the activities aren't in this bill, but the activities are now listed in NEMA. But it means that if it's near the coast, they're going to have to take into account all the factors that we've outlined in the bill, so that we make sure that the building process has got integrity and so forth, and that all these factors are considered. If they want to make such an application, they will have to go through the full EIA process, which means that all these factors are then going to be considered before any permission is granted for a development to take place or for a building to be erected in a particular place. So that is a built-in safeguard that the bill gives to future development or any activity, whether it be rebuilding something or building a new development, is going to have to be scrutinized in terms of those requirements. That's the one issue of the safeguard. Historically, when it comes to the mitigating the impact of what they've already suffered, the reason we can't interfere with existing property is because the Constitution doesn't allow us to. If we are going to interfere with people who own property, or be it in inappropriately developed areas, then we are already encroaching on property rights which would be frowned upon and which would be challenged. So the best that the bill can do at this stage is to make people aware that, well, of course, the storms have already made them well aware that they've been developed inappropriately. To nail home the point that if you do this in the future, you're not going to only suffer this, it could be worse, and that you will not be allowed to do this. So if you're thinking of rebuilding your property where it was destroyed, you are going to have a very difficult time doing that, because it's likely not to be approved. And that is where the bill is actually going to give that kind of protection.
Any further follow-up? Dr. Kajani?
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering, thinking aloud here, have you considered the policy of building of dikes? Or would it be feasible to address some of the problems that would be caused by flooding? Sorry.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Yes, everything is possible from an engineering perspective, or most things, and if you've got enough money, then things won't go to ladder to the moon. And it becomes a decision at the end of the day which way you want to go. And there are options. You can either retreat, which is the option, for example, that they're using in one of the coasts along the in the UK, where there are not many houses, where you can actually let the coast retreat in a natural fashion. And if they then have one single house, you can actually expropriate that. That's the one option. But there are other areas that, in fact, you won't be able to retreat. Like, for example, in Cape Town, right here, and where you will have to manage it, and it's going to cost a lot of money. And that is just the way it's going to be. We're going to have to pay for the wrong decisions that were made in the past. But hopefully with this bill, we can try and prevent further wrong decisions. So if we then develop, and we're not saying we must stop development, let's make sure that that development takes into account things like, as you mentioned, sea level rise, dynamic coastal processes like erosion, coastal storms. Let's put it back. The photograph we saw of Nature's Valley. Well, so what if the dune erodes a little bit? The sand will just come back when the sea becomes calm again, and those houses will not be affected. So yes, we can build dikes. You may be aware that government is putting money in to protect the coast at Langebaan, an area of maybe 2.5 kilometers, and it's costing close to 50 million rand. So it's extremely costly to protect, to go that route. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, counting down. Gone, gone, gone. I suppose this brings us to the end of the presentation. I'd like to thank you, DDG, with your team. Thank you.
But we'll meet up at the end, finally.
We will be having public hearings on this on Friday, so we'd appreciate it if you'd avail yourself.
This lady is a lawyer, that doctor. The rest of them.
Thank you.
No, no, they knew about it. They wanted to know if they must come.
Oh, okay.
That's what I
thought.
I think.